North Florida's premier women's leadership conference is off to a roaring start. Good Friday morning, live and on the go from the UNF Fine Arts Center. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 at the Generation W Conference. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Melissa Ross. Always live on the radio, and now First Coast Connect is also on iTunes. Just ahead, keep listening as we tell you all about Generation W and its incredible impact here on the First Coast. Then later, our Friday Media Roundtable breaks down the election results around town, and we discuss the biggest news of the week. Much more ahead this hour here from UNF's campus. But first, we are live from Generation W at the UNF Fine Arts Center, the premier women's leadership event in Jacksonville, bringing in incredible speakers from around the country, providing incredible information for both men and women. Founder Donna Orender joins us now to tell us all about it. Donna, a pleasure as always to speak to you. Good morning.
Good morning. It's been an incredible morning so far. It's unbelievable. Just so emotional here.
I know. This is such a powerful event. And for people that have never been out here for Generation W, can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to create this?
Well, it's just like I just said. The passion and the... We started Generation W with the belief that when people come together, especially women, magic happens. And we're proven right time and time and time again. And it's very magical. The people who come here... is overwhelming. When I look in the audience, it's the diversity of the representation here from our community, but also from New York, from California, from the Midwest, and the quality of speakers who raise their hands and say, we want to be a part of this. It's mm-hmm. just an incredible collaboration.
And it's so hard to even single out particular speakers because you have an incredible lineup today. But can you give us just a few examples of who people will be able to hear today?
Without a doubt. I mean, Elise Nelson, who's the CEO of Vital Voices, is on the stage now telling her story as a 21-year-old, kind of going to China. And think about this is 20 years ago, going to China, trying to get in this women's conference and finding her passion and purpose in life. And then truly her work about finding vital voices of women all around the world. It's incredibly important work, but it's so inspiring, her work. We have the head of Weight Watchers here because, you know, our relationship with food is a passion point, but it's good and it's bad and it's somewhat ugly as well, but it's really going to be good to learn about that. We have Deb Walton, who's the president of Thomson Reuters of content, and she's got an amazing story, a woman grown up on a sheep farm in Australia, now leading, actually, the financial world. Mm-hmm. Right there in Times, wherever you go in the middle of Manhattan. Her office is right there. I've been there. We've got a great panel today. We have a lot of issue-oriented stuff today. I mean, John Burr, I know he's here, part of your panel. But we're going to talk about gender equality because it is such a huge issue. And when you talk about community and you talk about your round table, really what we find is that companies who have diverse leadership, where women are at least 30%, obviously we would want 50%, we're 52% of the population, perform better. There's economic reality. But as much as it liberates women to be in liberation in leadership positions, it's also that much more positive for men as well. And I'm really looking forward to John when he leads Mark Lamping from the Jaguars, Eric Mann from the Y, Argy's going to be on that panel, Ed Burr, the head of the Civic Council. I mean, it's going to be pretty great.
And that's the overriding goal of Generation W, providing a platform and a message so that women feel empowered and men also buy into clearing a path for more women to seek leadership roles in this community and around the country, right?
Well, it's in their own best interest, right? All politics are local, which you guys are going to talk about. So when you want to start with local politics or any issue, you start with the personal politic. And if something is better for you personally, then you're going to be an advocate for it. And the truth of the matter is, gender equality is personally good for everyone who supports it. And so I'm really glad to be able to be with such a interesting and intelligent group of people who bring that forward. But we have Kelly Wallace here also from CNN,
right?
Digital reporter, and we have a panel called Generations. We have our anchor at 16 years old, and we have our other anchor at 90 years old.
Three generations represented today.
Actually, we probably could say five.
Five.
We have the 16-year-old, we have a 20, a college student, 30, 40, 50, and 90.
Amazing.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to play it like the newlywed game. It's called the trend game. What are the trends in the generations of women's lives that, you know, unite us, and the ones that, like, we might have something. Like, I can give you a question if you want.
Sure.
Let's see. Talk, text, or TV?
All three.
Okay, that's fair.
I do all three.
Sometimes simultaneously, which I get complaints about at home.
Yes.
but this is just an incredible event. And, of course, WJCT is the media sponsor of Generation W here live at the UNF Fine Arts Center. Just a lot happening today. It's very exciting to be part of it. Founder Donna Orender joining us. And I know you have a very busy day. So enjoy. And thank you so much for joining us on this program.
My pleasure, and for all of your listeners, and I know there are a lot of you because I listen every day and I feel part of your community. Please come this afternoon. There'll be a couple seats still left, and we'd love to.
Oh, okay, sure.
Come on down.
Yeah, come on out to the UNF Fine Arts Center. A big hand for Donna Orender.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We'll have more of the featured speakers from Generation W on the show later in the hour, but right now it is Friday, which means on this program it's time for our media roundtable here today. Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to see you. WJCT analyst John Burr here today.
Great to be here.
Eric Smith is here of People and Politics, former city councilman. Eric, always a pleasure.
Top of the morning to you, Melissa.
And A.G. Gankarski of Folio Weekly and Florida Politics. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, guys, Donna just said all politics is local, which is, of course, what we're going to talk about. The results of Tuesday's first election in Jacksonville, unitary election. There's going to be a runoff in May between incumbent Mayor Alvin Brown and the GOP frontrunner who made it through to the runoff, Lenny Curry. Let's begin with Eric Smith. Eric, what was your reaction to the shakeout on Tuesday night?
I'm not sure it is as earth-shaking as it's characterized to be. I think some of the intelligentsia has forgotten that there's an appellate process, and they've forgotten the fact that the city council can reconvene tomorrow, the next day, the next week, and reconsider and do something with that legislation. That said,
no, you're talking about the pension legislation.
Yeah. Yes, I'm talking about the pension legislation.
Sure, but you know what? I wanted to ask you as well about the election results between the mayor and Lenny Curry.
Well, I don't think there was any surprise. If I had a surprise, it was that Bill Bishop didn't do slightly better, maybe two or three points. But it turned out about the way that I thought that it would. I don't think there were any huge surprises in the council races. I think it was wonderful that the authorities were included with all of the inspector general and ethics mandates that will be on the city council and other people in government.
Nate Monroe, as Eric said, Bill Bishop had a strong third place showing despite not having the money and infrastructure support of his party, the Republican party leaders in Duval County. Bill Bishop coming in at about 17% of the vote in the race for mayor. Of course, the big question now in local political circles is, will Bill Bishop endorse either Mayor Brown or Lenny Curry for the May runoff, or will he sit out?
Sure. I think that Bill is a hard guy to read. I don't know which of those results, you know, we'll see. I would expect to hear something fairly soon, though. I mean, you know, for the next 2 weeks, that's an important narrative. If he waits much longer than that, I don't know that, you know, it carries as much weight.
A.G. Gankarski and John Burr, the other question is, where will Bill Bishop's supporters go? Who will they vote for in May?
Well, you have two different skews there. The first one being the Bishop supporters who are the Riverside, Avondale liberals, Dwayne Woods set. You can expect those people to go to Brown. But Bill Bishop is a conservative Republican. You heard it on the council floor for 8 years. And, you know, a lot of Bishop supporters are Republicans, and they very well could vote for Curry. Curry has made the case that he's making a lot of the same points that Bishop is. Both of them have been agents of change. And, you know, in reality, I think you're going to see a pretty even split there.
John Burr.
I think Bishop will endorse Curry. I mean, he's going to stick with the Republican Party on that. How Bishop's voters go, I think, is a whole different question, because I don't think people were necessarily voting Republican-Democrat there. I think they were more voting on some social issues and you know, the port and the dredging issue and things like that, where Bishop really kind of took some stances that were different than the other candidates.
And was much more specific in his policy positions.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry now, as they move ahead to May, Eric, Alvin Brown with about a 5-point lead over Lenny Curry, that gap could close. How do you see the strategies for both of these candidates over the next 8 weeks?
Well, first, I think the mayor has to accept that blood is thicker than water, but elephants, Republicans, are thicker than that. So it would be a major earthquake if Bishop went with the Brown campaign. But that said, historically, candidates don't deliver all their votes. I mean, it's not like Moses and the flock. It's just not going to happen. And I think they might split that vote fairly evenly.
If they split that vote evenly, that still gives an advantage to the incumbent, Mayor Brown.
It would. But I think the question is whether the mayor's strategists tell him to stay above the fray and stay positive. The other side has got to have a sense of desperation. They've already got a sense of entitlement. And
how do you mean?
My sense is they think they're entitled to have this, their state party chairman as the mayor, and I think it's going to be a very dirty campaign. The question becomes whether it's dirty on both sides.
And if you're just tuning in, First Coast Connect is live today from the UNF Fine Arts Center for the full hour for the Generation W conference. We can't take your calls today, but we want you to keep listening as our Friday Media Roundtable joins the show. A.G. Gankarski, Bill Bishop, the only candidate to say he would go on record to support an updated human rights ordinance for the city to cover LGBT citizens. That, of course, is a thorny social issue that neither Mayor Brown or Lenny Curry wants to get close to. Could there be some 11th hour switches or movement or evolving on that issue as the poll, if the polls should tighten further?
I think if the mayor is smart and he wants to get his liberal white Democratic base back, he's going to evolve on that issue in some way. Perhaps an executive order or something along those lines, something to bypass the council process on it might help. The mayor's got to present something to reach out to the bishop supporters besides a sentimental attachment to the 2011 election. I wanted to take issue with something Eric said regarding the Republicans feeling entitled to the mayoralty. I don't think that's the case. I think Lenny Curry realizes he's in a dogfight. He's been working hard for 2 years to get supporters, get big donors, all of those things. Even now he's trying to get a street team together to get out the vote for the election in 2 months. I don't think they take anything for granted. They know they're up against a serious mayor who's very popular with a lot of national support. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Allison Tant have both sent messages of support already. So the next 2 months are going to be Armageddon for Jacksonville politics.
Nate Monroe.
Wild because we've already had the governor of Texas weigh in.
Sure, and that's just the start. Of course, that's just the start. Nate.
You know, on this Bill Bishop issue, I mean, look, it's the narrative of the moment. Both campaigns are going to give lip service to it because you always want to win a news cycle. They'll take a Bill Bishop endorsement if they can get it. Whether or not that helps in the long term, I don't know that that's... It's not clear to me, and I highly doubt that either campaign is going to change their long-term strategy for this. You know, at the end
of
the day...
You don't see either candidate switching positions on anything.
I don't think we're going to see any major change out of either candidate in terms of how they're approaching the race. I mean, not for reasons of, like, courting Bill Bishop supporters. At the end of the day, partisans... People that are registered with a party vote with their party 95% of the time. That's just the way it works. That's how the pollsters look at it. That's how the consultants look at it. They're going to be interested in boosting turnout and ramping up their base and getting enthusiasm as high as they can get it. That's the game.
Uh-huh. And John Burr, do you agree or disagree?
Well, I think there's a big wild card here, and I think that is turnout. The turnout was roughly, 33%, I believe. That means, 67% of the eligible voters didn't vote. Well, if somebody can find a way to turn on some of those voters, and just 2 or 3 or 4% of them, could swing the difference.
In 2011, we saw higher turnout in the runoff, Eric, than we did in the March 1st election. Can Jacksonville repeat that?
Well, nothing is impossible. But unless one or both of these candidates becomes way more inspirational, I think the turnout stays way it is. Or unless some event we can't predict happens in the next several weeks, that could certainly turn an election. But the last election was only decided by 1,600 votes.
That's right.
And that's razor thin. And so I sure hope people vote. What is more important than this, really, to our city?
Speaking of voting, as we continue to discuss the top headlines of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable here on this special live remote version of First Coast Connect at Generation W, let's talk about the outcome in the sheriff's race for a moment. AG and Nate, Ken Jefferson leading Mike Williams, the two top vote getters in that contest going into the May runoff. Let's get your thoughts about that race. Those two candidates, how they go through the next 8 weeks. AG.
Well, Jefferson won by 15 points on Tuesday, but you know, here's the thing: we have a poll, and the poll has Williams within 8 points. Also, I think Williams has more room to gain votes. He's got the Farhat supporters, Holderfield supporters, you know, even Schoonover supporters available to him. I think Jefferson's gotten what he's going to get. So, and also Williams has a unified message with Lenny Curry. You know, that is to say, they're talking about the same things: getting cops back on the streets, Jacksonville Journey programs, et cetera. You know, Jefferson's message doesn't necessarily align with Brown's. Jefferson's talking about a lost generation that pulls the blood in the street regarding gangland shootings, Operation Ceasefire. You're not going to get that from Alvin Brown. Alvin Brown's message is positive all the way. So they're going to have to unify their messages. It's going to be a little bit difficult and advantage Republicans.
So Mike Williams can consolidate the votes of all those other Republicans that ran, Nate. Ken Jefferson, on the other hand, has strong name recognition and a very good personal brand in this community. What are your thoughts?
Sure. So I don't have any particular special insight on the sheriff's race. I spend most of my time with mayor stuff. But, you know, sort of to AG's point, I expect that race to tighten significantly. Again, this is, you know, these party identifications appear on the ballot, and that just matters a lot. Name ID helps. Name ID helps big time in a primary.
And John, what AG said about Mayor Brown and Ken Jefferson, do they need to coordinate their messaging in the same way that Lenny Curry and Mike Williams will be coordinating theirs?
Well, that, you know, obviously that would help somewhat. I think with the sheriff's race, it's less partisan even than the mayor's race. I think people vote the man. And both candidates have a really good opportunity to define themselves. Both sheriff's candidates do.
Sure.
And I think, you know, whichever one defines themselves and what they want to do best will win that race.
And let's talk about, just for a minute, the racial politics of this, Eric Smith. Let's assume that Mayor Brown and Ken Jefferson are both victorious. That would be an historic racial breakthrough for the city of Jacksonville. The first time in history we would have an African-American mayor and sheriff at the same time.
You know, I'm not sure it would be a historic breakthrough. I think it would be interesting and important, but I don't think any of the candidates is really talking about that or stressing that point. But back to the messaging, I think it's awfully difficult for the mayor and Ken Jefferson to coordinate messages, and it's probably got more downside
than upside.
Than it's got upside. Clearly, Williams is the running mate to Lenny Curry. There's no question about that. An interesting dynamic will be whether the sheriff continues to go on television in full battle regalia using the badge, which I think is wrong, to promote the candidacy. There was a lot of concern about the mayor using the seal of the city. That's not nearly as significant as a badge. But it's going to be interesting to watch this. I think it'll be very close.
Definitely so, and also making headlines this week as we talk about the JSO and their pension plan and also that of firefighters. That much-debated pension reform plan on the table for Duval County failed in the city council Tuesday. They deadlocked 9-9 on a vote to amend pensions to pay down the city's huge unfunded liability. This was a blow to Mayor Brown's administration. His chief of staff, AG, accused Republicans on the council of playing politics with pension reform. Those that voted against it said they had legitimate concerns about how this was being done. Your thoughts?
Right. We had two Democrats voting against it, Cresham Benny and Denise Lee. So it wasn't strictly a party line thing. There were Republicans voting for it, Jim Love, Greg Anderson, people like that. So it wasn't as cut and dry as it seems. Regarding the politics of it, it was interesting that Bill Bishop was notable in his opposition to the pension. He was one of the key people on council to say, I can't support this deal. We're passing on the problem to future generations. So it's going to be interesting to see if the mayor can get any movement on it. There have to be significant or substantial changes for it to be reintroduced to council within the next year. So the deal's got to be altered in some way. And right now the deal's non-starter. They don't have the financing deal, the financing part of it worked out. And, you know, given the politics of it, given the mechanics of it, I'm pessimistic they're going to get something done before the election.
Nate.
Well, to AG's point, because of a new development I expect we'll be discussing here shortly, I think the entire pension reform issue is a bit up in the air.
Let's talk about that because a circuit court judge ruled just a minute ago, actually it was yesterday, an existing 30-year agreement between the city and the Jacksonville Police and Fire Pension Fund is invalid because it was negotiated behind closed doors.
Yeah, and that, I mean, everyone is kind of scrambling to sort of make sense of how to go forward from here. In a way, you know, so it's going to be, this ruling will be appealed, so we're going to be in some legal limbo for a while, but if this is upheld, it's on its face a pretty good ruling for the city. It would achieve, it would break the city from this long-term commitment to, you know, retirement benefits for police and firefighters.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could ultimately be a good thing, but we'll have to just see how all of the stuff plays out.
Yeah, and it's hard to predict John Burr, whether that ruling will stand and the implications of that.
Well, I think we can predict the union will appeal the ruling. Beyond that, you're right. It's a second ruling on this freedom of information question that's gone the same way. So, you know, you got some precedent there. Let's say the ruling is ultimately upheld to the conclusion that it's brought to. The city, the city's in a little better position, but on the other hand, you know, they don't want to alienate the police and fire people. There's already talk in the fire department of people leaving the fire department and it being tough for them to recruit new officers because of this pension thing. And, you know, so it's a very delicate, long-range, delicate situation.
Eric Smith, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting to talk about the 30-year agreement because I think it's down to a 14-year agreement now. Am I right?
Yeah, 15 years of it.
Hesitate to strike me down if I'm wrong, but now it's a 14-year agreement. And
going to three.
I think a few months down the road, regardless of the ruling, something will get done, but it won't get done now because it's part of a political strategy. Don't let the mayor look like a leader. It's better that he look like he tried, he failed, he tried, he failed. And I think that's the politics of it.
I disagree with this. I mean, you keep bringing up that makes the mayor look like a leader or doesn't make the mayor look like a leader, but, you know, the deal is the leadership would be getting the deal through. I don't think that the Republicans are obstructing it just for the sake of obstructing it. I think they have serious qualms with the deal. I listened to it for 4 hours the other night. They went point by point and reiterated their issues with the deal. So, you know, while it looks political on the surface, while there's a political element to it, maybe there's some issue with the deal also that, you know, Yarborough, Bishop, all of these people have material points against it.
Nate Monroe.
Well, I'm not going to debate whether or not it's political. An important point to keep in mind here is that reforming the benefits, that is one piece of this. It's a big piece, but it's not the deterrent. Figuring out how to more quickly pay down the city's, you know, $1.6 billion debt to the Police and Fire Pension Fund, nothing takes effect until that's figured out. That has never even been close to being resolved. The council and the mayor are still totally sideways on how that gets done. Even if minus this court ruling on Wednesday night, the council had approved this deal. That deal doesn't take effect until that funding mechanism is figured out.
I think Nate is absolutely on point. And I'm not really cross purposes with AG, because there are many honorable people at the council in both parties that just had problems with it. If I was on the council, I would have some serious reservations about making this deal with the JEA. There's too many unanswered, open-ended questions. So I'd be asking those kind of questions.
John.
Well, I think, you know, the whole pension thing has just been completely thrown up in the air. I think actually the judge's ruling yesterday kind of takes the heat off the mayor for not finding, quote, not finding an agreement, because everybody's, you know, just like, geez, where do we go now? Where do we go now? That becomes the issue. The issue is not, gee, the mayor couldn't get the agreement. Thanks to this judge's ruling, the issue is now, good Lord, where do we go now?
Yeah, exactly. And where we go now is our finally weekly roundup of the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from across the Sunshine State this week. Luckily, there's never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now. Only in Florida. Critters, bath salts, and third graders who will not flunk out make the cut today, because only in Florida do a couple of drunk guys go joyriding with a wounded owl and capture it all on film as well. But state wildlife officials aren't laughing. According to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, two men could face charges for keeping a great horned owl captive. They uploaded the video to Facebook a couple weeks ago. It shows them driving around with the owl, which appeared to be dazed or stunned. The man who claims to have shot the video wrote on his Facebook page that they found the owl while driving around West Palm Beach and wanted to fry it up.
Of course.
Only in Florida do men high on bath salts headbutt the windshields of terrified female drivers. Volusia County deputies say 35-year-old Richard Kiefer dented the hood of a woman's Kia with his head and cracked open the windshield, too, while high on the bath salts. The driver stopped the vehicle and started screaming, whereupon, what's his name? Kiefer was arrested. If it's Florida, it's bath salts, pretty much.
That doesn't speak well to the Kia's integrity either.
And finally, only in Florida can you flunk out and still get promoted to the next grade. Actually, that happens in other states, too. But amid continued backlash over Florida's testing regimen in schools, the state may stop holding back third graders who fail this week on a standardized test. If lawmakers agree to the change, it would mark a big departure from a policy pushed into law by former Governor Jeb Bush. He vowed to end social promotion as part of his A-plus education law, tying a promotion to the fourth grade to how students did on a standardized reading test. So if you have a third grader out there who flunks this week, well, it looks like they might not really flunk.
Well, they'll figure out reading at some point.
That would have been good news for me in third grade, I'll tell you that much.
No child left behind
in another way. Thanks, Eric Smith, Nate Monroe, A.G. Gankarski, and John Burr. Thanks for coming out for our live remote today.
Thank you.
And still to come, much more from the UNF Fine Arts Center. We are broadcasting live from the Generation W Women's Leadership Conference. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
I'm Christian McBride. This week on Jazz Night in America, we're in California with the SF Jazz Collective. Every year, this all-star octet tips their hat to a different jazz master, and we recorded their tribute to Joe Henderson. We'll hear arrangements from David Sanchez, Avishai Cohen, Robin Eubanks, and more. That's this week on Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Florida legislature is in session, and Capitol Report is your nightly connection to what's happening in Tallahassee as lawmakers debate and decide issues that affect all Floridians, such as expanding health care and gambling, protecting the state's water resources, private versus public schools, and prison reform. Hear Capitol Report each weeknight during the legislative session on this Florida Public Radio station.
That's Tuesday through Friday nights at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
And welcome back to First Coast Connect, broadcasting live from the UNF Fine Arts Center from today's Generation W Conference. We're live and on the go this morning. I'm Melissa Ross. There is always so much happening at the University of North Florida. Incredible research always going on, and we want to share some of it with you right now. Dr. K.C. Nicolau, the Harry C. and Olga K. Weiss Professor of Chemistry at Rice University, will speak tonight here at UNF. His research group first synthesized the widely used anti-cancer drug Taxol and a number of other drugs used today for treatment of cancers, leukemia, and others. Dr. Nicolau joins us along with Dr. Christos Lampropoulos, Assistant Professor of Chemistry at UNF. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you on the program today. Dr. Nicolau, let's begin with you. Can you tell us about this incredibly important research?
Yes, Melissa, I'm delighted to be on your program. Thank you very much for inviting us here today with you. Our research, our mission at the university is really the education of young people into the sciences, and at the same time we carry out research directed mainly against cancer, against the, treating the disease of cancer. So as you mentioned, back in the 1990s, Taxol was a very exciting, looked like a very exciting drug, but it was very scarce. They would be harvested from the Pacific yew tree from the forests of Oregon and Washington on the west coast, but it took hundreds of trees to be sacrificed to treat one patient. So it was a need for the molecule to be synthesized in the laboratory, so we embarked on a program to synthesize it. In 1994 we completed the synthesis, and then since that time we've been working on other drug candidates for in collaboration with pharmaceutical companies, biotechnology companies. And today we are very excited about a new paradigm to discover such drugs. Namely, we're working on targeted cancer chemotherapy, a new type of drug that can be compared to laser-guided missiles to attack cancer cells selectively without damaging the normal cells of the body. So these drugs, a couple of them have been approved in the last couple of years, and they look very promising. So there are several new ones now in the clinical trials, hope that they will be approved and used by people. So the process involves synthesis of highly toxic compounds, which can be found in nature, like the bottom of the ocean, or the forest, or the soil, but they're very scarce. So our mission is to synthesize them, because we specialize in making molecules, complex molecules with important biological and medical properties. We can synthesize these molecules in large amounts in our laboratories, and then we give them to experts that can attach them onto antibodies. Antibodies are like delivery systems that can take these toxic compounds to the right place in the body to fight cancer. And I think this is a new way of looking at more selective, more effective drugs against cancer.
Dr. Lampropoulos, this sounds like a game changer, quite frankly, when it comes to patient outcomes, cancer patients. Is it?
Of course. And Professor Nicolau is the leading expert. He was at Scripps, leading a very fruitful department in the golden age of Scripps, and he was responsible for the progress in the Skaggs Institute and now at Rice in Texas. So we are very grateful to have him. He gave a very inspiring talk yesterday at the chemistry department to all the students, and tonight he will give a more general audience talk at the University Center, and everybody's welcome to join. I want to mention that this would not have been possible without the support of the Dreyfus Foundation that gave us this very prestigious Boissevain lectureship to bring Professor Nicolau over and spend two full days with faculty, with students and staff and administrators, give us tips on funding, because that's a big issue with our science community. Funding is getting very scarce. Even though we have been pretty successful, we got a big NSF grant for an instrument in the chemistry department in collaboration with physics. But again, these funding rates are dropping so low that it's very hard for young faculty to attract them. And that was a big deal for us. This lectureship was only awarded to four universities in the nation.
And UNF, one of those select few. Yep. Exciting news. Dr. Nicolau, what else can you share with us about the future implications of this research? Patients, of course, will be very excited, patients dealing with a variety of cancers.
Yeah, well, as you know, we are in academia, and therefore our mission is dual, is to educate young people into the sciences, and also to set the foundation for drug discovery and development. And as Dr. Lambropoulos mentioned, we need more funding from the government. In recent years, the funding has not been going up the way it should be. And I think that the healthcare of the people is obviously a priority for us, as well as education. So we are struggling, if you wish, in terms of attracting more funding. And in collaboration with industry. Nowadays, the trend is to collaborate with industry, because we can take your fundamental discoveries that you make in academia and take them all the way to the patient by collaborating with the experts from the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industries, and then eventually the clinicians take over to test them into people. So we are very optimistic, because we have in place academic industrial partnerships that allow us to take our discoveries all the way to the clinic. And I think that's the new paradigm for research in this field.
Not too late for people to come hear this incredible lecture tonight, correct?
Yes, there's still room. We have e-tickets. It's part of the Distinguished Voices lecture series of the University of North Florida. So interested people can go to www.unf.edu/lectures. There's a free e-ticket, and they can print it out, come over, and it would be a very inspiring talk, more of the history of drugs and very important molecules for society. And frankly, synthetic chemistry is an art, and if anyone is an artist around here, that's Professor Nicolau, and he will be able to tell us.
Well, it's a pleasure to host you both. Thanks so much for sharing this important research with our listeners. Thank you, and have a great evening tonight here on campus.
Thank you for having us.
We were joined by Dr. Casey Nicolau, the Harry C. and Olga K. Weiss Professor of Chemistry at Rice University, Dr. Christos Lampropoulos, Assistant Professor of Chemistry here at UNF. Lots of great talent here on this campus. We're always privileged to share it. We are live from the UNF Fine Arts Center for the full hour this morning from the Generation W Conference here on First Coast Connect. And we're back with more in a moment from Gen W. Live and on the go. Back in a moment.
Every day on Morning Edition, it's the news you can't do without.
This morning, we've been looking at what's happening.
There's conservatism, libertarianism, environmentalism, religion.
We're not props. We're just everyday people.
The crowd, the joy, the sense of hope.
Historic.
Listen to the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear from people who really make you think, like astrophysicist Brian Green explaining the scientific theory that our universe is just one of many.
And the image that I like to have in mind is, imagine that our universe is like one slice of bread in a much grander cosmic loaf, with the other slices of bread being other universes.
No subject is too big for Fresh Air. Join us. weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Looking for fresh music? Join us weeknights at 7 for After Hours. You'll hear everything from jazz to electronica, only on 89.9 FM After Hours.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect. We're live and on the go and broadcasting for the full hour today from the UNF Fine Arts Center at today's Generation W event, bringing women's leadership's passion and purpose to the First Coast. I'm Melissa Ross. We have two dynamic speakers from today's event with us now as they talk about their life coaching business for millennials, providing clarity, inspiration, and coaching to people who know what they don't want in work and life and are searching for what they do want. It'll be a featured talk at Gen W later today. Kristen Walker and Rachel East, co-founders of Clarity on Fire, join us now, ladies. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Excited
so much
to be here.
This is so fun.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. So tell us a little bit about Clarity on Fire.
So Clarity on Fire is our life and career coaching business. We particularly work with millennials, primarily women. We do have a few men that we work with. And we, like you said, we really work with people who don't know what they're passionate about, and they're really craving that sense of passion and fulfillment in their career, and they just don't know where to get started.
And so to help, you've created the Passion Profile Quiz.
You know, it's so funny. We just created this because it was fun, and what it ended up being is something that people have taken like 25,000 times now in the past few months since we've started it. But basically, it helps people figure out the intersection between their career and their passion. And actually, it's so simple, but there's so many things people don't know about.
Like what?
Well, here's a little preview from what we're going to talk about later. People don't realize that, you know, everyone's so focused on what my passion is that they don't necessarily stop first and ask, well, how is that going to show up? And what is it going to, like, how do I actually want to combine my career and passion? Because there's many different ways you could actually do that. And so that's what we're going to bring to Gen W today, is some clarity around how to do it.
And in particular to your generation, the millennial generation,
exactly.
Correct?
Exactly.
And can you tell me a little bit about the specifics of speaking to that group of young career professionals?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So millennials seem to have, for the most part, a lot of values in common that we've been noticing.
Yeah.
And because of that, they're much more open to alternatives and career paths that maybe weren't considered the traditional or the paths that a lot of people have taken. So they're looking for alternatives. And so that's really what we're coming up with the Passion Profile System, is showing you there's a lot of different ways to work.
Yeah. Your generation, I'm a Generation X person.
Right.
And so I began in the workforce in a completely different era. Your generation has a different priorities, different point of view.
And I think we have to thank your generation and our parents. I think our parents are both baby boomers, so we have to thank
so
our
mine.
Parents' generation for, you know, actually opening up that possibility, because, you know, my mom's generation, what, they could be nurses or they could be teachers.
Right.
And now, I mean, women, we can really actually do anything. And that's amazing. But the problem with that is that there are so many options that people don't know what to choose now.
Yeah.
So that's why we have, you know, a lot of opportunity to speak to people, is because there are a lot of people with too many choices and have literally no idea where to start or how to do it.
People need to start by going online and taking your Passion Profile Quiz.
Yeah.
And come out today to Generation W at the UNF Fine Arts Center. Still a few empty seats to hear about Clarity on Fire. Founders Kristen Walker and Rachel East, great to meet you, and I'll see you later today.
Thank you so much.
And much more to come. It's First Coast Connect, live and on the go from Gen W, back right after this.
This Friday on Closing the Loop, Kelly Norman graduated from Baker High School in McLennan, went to college, and returned as a teacher to start a drama program. It might not be Broadway, but don't tell that to her students, some of whom have gone on to work in professional theater. Closing the Loop, every Friday during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on 89.9 WJCT.
Closing the Loop is sponsored in part by First Coast Home Pros, local specialists in carpet, grout, and upholstery cleaning.
The Dinosaur Train is rolling into Orange Park. Thrasher Horn Center and WJCT present Jim Henson's Dinosaur Train Live, Buddy's Big Adventure, on Tuesday, May 12 at 6 p.m. See the beloved stars of the hit PBS series come to life on stage in your hometown for the first time. Join Buddy, Tiny, King, Don, and their family and friends in this fun-filled, interactive musical trip back in time. Tickets are on sale now at 904-276-6815 or thcenter.org.
Congratulations to writer James English, winner of the first quarter of The Square. Now it's your chance to show off your art, whether it's music, visual art, sculpture, poetry, and more. Go to wjct.org/The Square, check out the amazing local talent, and submit your work now.
When a mama and daddy moved into the house across the street.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect, live and on the go this hour from the Generation W Conference at the UNF Fine Arts Center. Lots happening out here today. I'm Melissa Ross. And finally this hour, we want to tell you about a pop-up theater piece happening downtown for one show only this Sunday. Director Barbara Colicello is here now with a preview of Love and Information. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
Great to see you. So tell us about this. It's a pop-up theater piece, right?
Right. This piece, Love and Information, is extremely improvisatory. The playwright, Carol Churchill, gives you very little cues. She gives you lines of dialogue, but you don't know who the characters are, where it takes place. So because it's in that style, I decided to keep the whole event a surprise. So I thought, well, we'll just pop it up, do it one time, it's a happening.
You're going to build up the buzz and then bust out with it on Sunday.
Right, and we feel like this piece could be popped up other places, maybe with different actors in different scenarios.
And the theme actually is sort of in keeping with today's Generation W event. Can you tell us how?
Yes, definitely. Well, today, as I listen to the speakers and they talk about passion and purpose, this playwright, Carol Churchill, really examines what's going on in our crazy world with technology. She looks at violence and politics and relationships. And I also relate that I have this passion and purpose to develop people's individual voices. And so this process that we do really empowers the individual actors in this piece.
Now, it's a pop-up piece. It's downtown. Can you reveal the location?
Yes. I'm excited to be doing it at the Carling. I moved downtown about 6 months ago, and the Carling is this amazing, fabulous place, and it has all this natural light streaming in the ballroom. So I decided to do it there. So we're not using anything artificial, no artificial lights. So if it's a rainy day, it'll look one way, and if it's sunny, it'll look another way.
And for people who aren't familiar with pop-up performances, can you explain why there's such a special energy around them?
Well, theater in general is exciting because it is live and anything can happen. But with a pop-up, you don't have everything completely answered. And it's loosey-goosey. It's life. It's all about improvisation, about recovery. So, you know, the actors are prepared for anything to happen. And, I mean, that's the nature of live theater. But in a pop-up, we're getting a lot. We're standing room only. And we're full.
It's sold out?
Yeah, we sold out 2 days ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but we're doing standing room only.
Okay,
telling people bring their pillows.
So if people want to come, they need to come down to the Carling in downtown Jacksonville Sunday at...
Yes, it starts at 3.
3 o'clock.
I would get there about 2:15 if you don't have a ticket.
I bet you'll get a few walk-ups. Jacksonville kind of has a way of doing that, don't they?
Yeah. It's something different, and... I'm excited about the piece.
It's exciting to host you, Barbara Colicello, the director of Sunday's pop-up Love and Information, 3 p.m. at the Carling. Have a great time. Break a leg. I know it'll be excellent.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming out to Gen
Thank
W
you.
Today.
Yeah.
And that is our program live and on the go from the UNF Fine Arts Center as we close out this broadcast from the Generation W Women's Leadership Event. Thanks to all of our guests today. This show is produced by Sean Birch. Our show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. If you love the show, catch our daily podcast. It's now available on iTunes. And send your feedback to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Next on Diane Rehm, a panel of journalists joins Diane for analysis of the week's top national news stories. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday with State Attorney candidate Wes White. Thanks, everybody, and come on out to Gen W today. Still a few seats left. Have a great weekend.